If you want to lose the weight for the last time, visit myphdweightloss.com. Welcome into Just the Truth. Glad to have you join me in the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Studio today. Joe Biden, the man who is trying to convince Americans that he's capable of serving another 4 years as the world's most powerful man, did it again today. Biden appears to read script instructions out loud in his latest teleprompter gaffe. We've got that for you. Also, a grand jury in Arizona indicted 18 Republicans with conspiracy, fraud, and forgery for submitting a document to Congress falsely declaring that Donald Trump beat Joe Biden in Arizona during the 2020 presidential election. Are we ever going to get past 2020? Isn't it 2024 now? Did I miss something here? Also, racing around the campus, blocking streets and sidewalks to protest the U.S. support of Israel may work in New York City, but a group of anti-Israel protesters at the University of Texas that was inspired by the Columbia University protests learned the hard way that don't work too well in Texas. And manufacturing jobs, are they about to become unionized in my home state of South Carolina? After a landmark union vote last Friday in Tennessee, the United Auto Workers Union has set its sights on two South Carolina auto plants. We'll talk with you about that as well. 864-477-JOEY, 864-477-5639 is how you join the conversation today on the Furman Ford text line. You can leave a quick voice message. Emails are welcome, joey@joeyhudson.com.
I told you we'd be back.
And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
It's Joey Hudson.
I wanted to name it the Joey Hudson Bill, but, you know, they don't allow you to name put names on bills, but I wanted to call it the Joey Hudson Bill because I know that one's been near and dear to you for a number of years.
That's how it's done. Let your voice be heard.
And the truth shall set you free.
Here's Joey Hudson.
You want a glimpse of who our commander-in-chief is? The man who has his finger on the nuclear button? The man who Democrats believe should have 4 more years in the Oval Office rather than being sent to a peaceful retirement home where he can be taken good care of? It's not the first time, and probably won't be the last, but once again yesterday, giving a speech, Joe Biden read the cues on his teleprompter. The president seemed to suffer a verbal slip-up during a speech at a trade union conference. This was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. Now, just to be clear here, if you've never seen a teleprompter and how it works, when Joe Biden is standing there behind his podium and you see these two pieces of clear glass on either side of him, one to the right, one to the left, so that as he scans the crowd, he can see what the teleprompter is telling him. It has his speech there, and quite often it will have cues like pause, look right, look left, that type of thing. You're not supposed to read those. Joe Biden has done that multiple times. He did it again yesterday as he's reading the teleprompter. He appeared to incorporate the script instructions in the middle of his speech, resulting in sort of an awkward applause line. The moment came during a section of his remarks straight out of a campaign stump speech. Here's the president.
I see an America where we defend democracy, not diminish it. I see an America where we protect freedoms, not take them away. I see an economy that grows from the middle out and the bottom up, where the wealthy pay their fair share, so we can have child care, paid leave, and so much more, and still reduce the federal deficit and increase economic growth. Folks, imagine what we can do next. 4 more years, pause.
4 more years, pause. 4 more years, pause.
And the crowd is chanting 4 more years, 4 more years. And it would have been perfect had he delivered it properly, because I'm sure the crowd had been queued up as well to start chanting at that point in the speech. And that was the whole idea of his staff when they loaded the speech into the teleprompter, to put that cue in there to pause here, deliver the punchline, and then pause and allow the crowd to start responding. Did you catch it when he said pause? He said it, actually said it twice. The president says, imagine what we could do next, 4 more years, and he's supposed to pause there so the crowd can start chanting. And that's what the instruction says, except he read it. And then he kind of started laughing. Now, I'm not sure if he was laughing at himself, if he realized what he had done again. or if he's laughing because of the chanting that breaks out. Listen again, and I've kind of amplified it for you so you can hear it.
Four more years. Pause, 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 pause.
Throughout his speech, Biden blasted former President Donald Trump as being anti-union and a defender of the ultra-wealthy. He went on to try to paint a contrast between his and Trump's economic policies as the Scranton plan and the Mar-a-Lago plan, referring to his hometown in Pennsylvania, which he often does, and Trump's residence in Florida. Biden's teleprompter mix-up is only the latest in the president's long list of gaffes. There's a whole list of them. We could do a whole podcast on Biden gaffes. On Tuesday of this week, he delivered fodder to conservative commentators by mistakenly saying that he and his party can't be trusted. Did you hear that one? And by the way, he's true. This is true. They can't be trusted. Biden was speaking at a Florida campaign rally at the time. He was focusing on abortion in particular. And during his critique of Trump's abortion stance, he flipped the tables on himself. He said, "I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times do we have to prove we can't be trusted?" When he meant to say, to have said he can't be trusted, and said we can't be trusted. Audience members could be heard laughing after his comment. Biden continued, seemingly not noticing the mistake that he'd made. His critics on X had a field day with that gaffe, many saying that they were surprised to find themselves agreeing with the president for once. Folks, this is bad. This man is feeble. And it's getting worse by the day. A Quinnipiac University poll released yesterday shows that Biden's slight lead in some areas over former President Trump is vanishing quickly, despite the fact that Trump's in trial in a courtroom in New York City and can't be out campaigning. Trump's trial related to the 34 counts of falsifying business records that he's been charged with started last week with jury selection. Moved into oral opening arguments this week. Trump has pleaded not guilty, of course. The poll also found that the presidential race is a dead heat with Biden and Trump tied at 46% in some of the key states. Now, there are other polls that show Trump with 2, 3, 4 percentage points lead. This is the Quinnipiac poll, though. And over the past few months, Biden and Trump have been pretty much in a dead heat with in a couple of instances, Biden has had a 1 or 2 point lead. The two remain tied at 37% with the inclusion of independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy, who comes in with 16%, Dr. Cornel West, who has 3%, and the Green Party's Jill Stein has 3%. You know, you think after Jill Stein has run for president how many times now? I mean, she's run multiple times. You think that by now she could at least get more than 3%. Those numbers, of course, mark a significant closing of the gap for Trump, again, who trailed Biden 48-45 in Quinnipiac's March poll. And this is one poll of many, let's just be clear. However, with the inclusion of Kennedy, West, and Stein, Trump held a 1 point lead over Biden, 39-38. Which has the Biden camp literally freaking out here that Kennedy is going to be pulling for Biden more so than Trump. Now, that's debatable as well. There's some polls that show that Kennedy hurts Trump. There's some polls that show Kennedy hurts Biden. I don't know that we're going to know until we actually get to November and people get a chance to actually cast their ballots. Biden's job approval, though, and here's this is what any incumbent president, it has to terrify them. He has a dismally low 35% job approval rating. That is down from 37% in March, while 61% said they disapprove of his job performance, up from 59%. Those numbers are some key metrics, again, that would terrify any incumbent president. Regarding the charges Trump faces in his New York trial, a plurality of 46% said they believe the former president did something illegal, while 45% say he didn't. However, 27% believe that he did something unethical but not illegal, and 18% believe he did nothing wrong at all. If Trump were to be convicted on the charges, 21% of those said they would be less likely to vote for him. 62% said it would not affect their vote whatsoever. And 15% said they'd be more likely to vote for him. Now, Biden has to be looking at those numbers as well. Think of that. 62% said it wouldn't affect their vote, while 15% said they're more likely to vote. That's a bad combination for Joe Biden. Joe Biden should hope that Donald Trump gets out of that courtroom quickly and that they do not find him guilty. Of course, Trump has argued that his trial is politics, which it is. He called it a political persecution earlier this week. He maintains his innocence. Former president, the first ever to be a defendant in a criminal trial, vowed to tell the truth if he takes the stand. Now, that's going to be interesting to see if Donald Trump takes a stand. You think he will? I'd love to get your comments on that. You think Donald Trump will end up on the stand? 864-477-JOEY. 864-477-5639 is the Furman Ford text line. I'd love to hear from my political pros out there. Will Donald Trump end up on the stand in this case? Or will he let his attorneys do his talking for him and the witnesses who will come forward? He also, of course, is arguing that the trial is unfairly keeping him from off the campaign trail, and that gives Biden the advantage. There's some merit in that, too. If this is not election interference, I've never seen election interference. A grand jury in Arizona yesterday indicted 18 Republicans with conspiracy, fraud, and forgery for submitting a document to Congress falsely declaring that Donald Trump beat Joe Biden in Arizona during the 2020 presidential election. Again, I thought we were past that. It's 2024. We're talking about a November election, and there's this Arizona Democrat Attorney General is still stuck on 2020. I'll give you the details on that in just a moment. First, let me talk with you about getting healthy, about losing that excess weight, and being able to do some of the things that you want to do this summer. PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. Dr. Ashley Lucas, I was able to meet Dr. Lucas almost 4 years ago, and boy, am I glad I did. I lost 30 pounds pretty quickly. I've been able to maintain that weight loss for almost 4 years now. If you want to get healthy and if you want to lose the weight for the last time, let me encourage you to call right now, 864-252-4925. Pause the podcast for a minute. That's what I love about podcasts. You can stop them for just a moment. Pause the podcast, get a pen and piece of paper, write this down, 864-252-4925. You can also go online to myphdweightloss.com. Regardless of how you contact them, let's get that initial consultation set up so that you can get started quickly. And I promise you, this is a phone call you'll never regret. You're going to feel better. You're going to be able to focus on things. You're going to be sleeping better. You're going to have the energy to do things you haven't done in a long, long time. Play with the kids, the grandkids, whatever that is. Play a round of golf and not get winded. You're going to feel better about yourself. Regardless of how much weight you need to lose, Dr. Ashley Lucas and her team at PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition can help you. PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition, the official partner of the Clemson Tigers and their fans. These court documents identify these were filed in Arizona. The Democrat Attorney General there, Chris Mays, blacked out some of the names of there are about seven individuals indicted in records release. Her office stated in a press release that the names would be disclosed once those individuals were served with the charges. The court documents identify a prior U.S. president, hint, hint, Donald Trump, presumably, of course, referring to President Trump, as an unindicted co-conspirator. The indictment reads, in Arizona and the United States, the people elected Joseph Biden as president on November 3rd, 2020. Unwilling to accept this fact, defendants and unindicted co-conspirators schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency to keep unindicted co-conspirator 1 in office against the will of Arizona's voters. This scheme would have deprived Arizona voters of their right to vote and have their votes counted. Now, electors are people selected to officially cast the state's electoral votes within the U.S. Electoral College system utilized during presidential elections. I know it can be confusing sometimes, the popular vote versus electoral vote. You know, that might be a good Just the Truth podcast in its own one day for me just to break down for you the Electoral College and how that works. But basically, we cast our votes. States choose their electors, and they're the ones who actually elect the president, because you have to win the electoral votes, the Electoral College votes. So these fake electors, as the Attorney General is calling them, this scheme involved alternate electors from six states where Joe Biden was declared the winner. These election electors pledged to support President Trump by casting ballots on December 14, 2020, the date when electors nationwide are required to meet at state capitals to place the official votes. While labeled as fake electors, they viewed themselves as a contingent elector. They believed that they were voting for President Trump to ensure the validity of such a vote in the case that he was successful in some of the legal challenges against the election's outcome. These were people who thought they were doing the right thing for their president. The 11 people identified as the, quote, alleged fake electors from Arizona, Tyler Boyer, Nancy Cottle, Jake Hoffman, Anthony Kern, Jim Lehman, Robert Montgomery, Samuel Moorhead, Lorraine Pellegrino, Greg Safston, Kelly Ward, and Michael Ward each face 9 felony counts. These charges encompass conspiracy, fraudulent schemes, and forgery. The indictment contains excerpts from text messages and emails exchanged among the unindicted conspirators whose identities are concealed right now. These communications mention allies of President Trump, like a former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, lawyers Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, and John Eastman, Christina Bobb, campaign advisor Boris Epstein, and former campaign aide Mike Roman. Mr. Mays said on Wednesday, a state grand jury made up of everyday regular Arizonans has now handed down felony indictments for all 11 Republican electors, as well as several others connected to this team. These are serious indictments, but this is the first hurdle that the state must pass in our constitutional criminal justice system. When the results of the November 2020 election were ultimately certified, the 11 individuals nominated as Arizona's Republican electors convened in Phoenix, where they signed a certificate during a ceremony on December 14, 2020, asserting themselves as duly elected and qualified electors and alleging that President Trump had won the state, which they believed he had. And that was their right to believe that. It's not a criminal. This is not a criminal action. The partisan attorney general has turned it into such. The ceremony came soon after U.S. District Judge Diane Humtinwa had dismissed their lawsuit that sought to decertify the results that awarded then-candidate Biden's victory in the state. The judge had dismissed their lawsuit for lack of legal standing, untimely filing, and failure to substantiate their claims with factual evidence. Their lawsuit was one of 8 that sought to challenge the integrity of the vote in Arizona. The Arizona Republican Party posted a one-minute video of the signing ceremony on social media. Subsequently, the document was transmitted to Congress and the National Archives, where it was just ignored. Arizona GOP Chairwoman Kelly Ward said at the time that her state's Republican electors who cast their votes for President Trump believe they represent the legally cast votes in our state. Now, the indictment yesterday reads, defendants deceived the citizens of Arizona by falsely claiming that those votes were contingent only on a legal challenge that would change the outcome of the election. In reality, defendants intended their false votes for Trump. Pence would encourage Pence to reject the Biden-Harris votes on January 6, 2021, regardless of the outcome of their legal challenge. The Attorney General's office launched its investigation several months after Ms. Mays, a Democrat, took office, replacing Republican Mark Brnovich. Wednesday's indictment in Arizona marks the 4th state to bring charges against individuals involved in the scheme of the so-called fake electors. Now, again, the Democrats accuse Republicans of continuing to second-guess the results of 2020, yet they keep using the justice system to intimidate people. It's 2024. It's time to move on, right? Am I missing something here? Should Arizona and any of these other states be wasting taxpayer dollars bringing these types of suits? And is this not some type of election interference? Are they not trying to intimidate Republicans as we head into November? Love to get your comments on the Furman Ford text line, 864-477-5639. Leave a voice message. Send me an email, joey@joeyhudson.com. Before we leave Arizona, one more thing. The Arizona House of Representatives voted to repeal the 1864 law outlawing nearly all abortions in a vote yesterday. Three Republican lawmakers joined their Democrat colleagues in the House in backing the effort to squash the 160-year-old law. Now, you may recall that just a few weeks ago, the Arizona Supreme Court found in favor and ruled that the 1864 law still stood. Wednesday's 32-28 vote marked the third attempt in 3 weeks by the GOP-controlled state house to repeal the long-dormant law, again, that the state Supreme Court ordered Arizona to enforce earlier this month. The repeal effort now heads to the state Senate, which is narrowly controlled by Republicans and could take up a repeal vote as early as next Wednesday, we're told. Arizona Democrats pillared the near-total abortion ban law as archaic and cruel. Most Republican state house lawmakers, however, were against repealing the law, which allows for the prosecution of doctors who perform abortions illegally and has no exceptions for rape or incest. Republican House Speaker Pro Tem Travis Grantham said, according to the Arizona Mirror, "I'm proud of my caucus for having fought this off as long as we have. I hope people are happy now." I think he's probably speaking of those three Republicans who weakened and turned on their caucus. He said, "Stop calling it archaic to ban abortions. It's archaic to do abortions." Former President Trump criticized the state Supreme Court's ruling earlier this month, arguing that the judges went too far and predicting that it would get straightened out very quickly. I'm not quite sure. I never completely understood what President Trump was saying at that point. Scottsdale Representative Alexander Colladan denounced his fellow Republicans who have claimed that failing to repeal the Civil War law would result in GOP losses in November. He said, "We're willing to kill infants to win an election. Put that in context, it's a little hard to stomach," he said. "Politics is important, but it's not worth our souls." In the repeal effort, if the repeal effort succeeds in the state Senate, it will then head to Democrat Governor Katie Hobbs' desk for her signature. She is opposed to the 1864 law, so one can assume that she will sign it. The centuries-year-old law is set to go into effect on June 8th and would supersede the state's current 15-week abortion ban. Racing around a campus, blocking streets and sidewalks to protest the U.S. support of Israel may work in New York City. But a group of anti-Israel protesters at the University of Texas, inspired by the protests we've watched this week at Columbia University, learned the hard way that don't work too well in the state of Texas. I got the full story here for you in just a moment. Let me talk with you about Furman Ford first. You're looking for a new vehicle, looking to purchase maybe a great pre-owned vehicle, one that you can trust, or you need service on the vehicle you have, and you're having trouble getting an appointment for service. I've heard stories of it taking 2, 3, 4 weeks or more to get a car in to get service. You're not going to find that at Furman Ford. And by the way, your car doesn't have to be a Ford for them to service it. They service all makes and models. I believe it's more important than ever for us to support locally owned businesses now. And that's what you're going to get when you go to Furman Ford in Lawrence. They have their name on the sign, because their name is on the line with every single transaction. That's why they call it Furman Ford. That's why Matthew Furman and Jim Furman put their name on the building, because they do business the right way. You can stop in. You can give them a call. You can send them an email. You're always going to have access to a member of the Furman family. They'll help you navigate some of the great deals they have on their selection of pre-owned vehicles, their new vehicles. And again, they'll help you service your existing vehicle. And what's even better, when you drive your new vehicle off the lot or you drive out of their service area, you know that your money is staying right here, supporting the communities that we live in and we love. Visit my friends at Furman Ford at Lawrence. Find them online at FurmanFord.com where you can check out all their inventory, FurmanFord.com. We've been watching the protest at some of the Ivy League schools over the past week or so, couple weeks. Columbia University on Monday suspended their in-class instruction. They've gone to totally virtual learning for the rest of the semester because a bunch of thugs have just literally closed down their university. And the president has allowed it. The president of Columbia University has allowed this to happen. So some Texas, University of Texas in Austin students got the idea, well, we'll protest too. They've been watching it on TV, on CNN. Thought, well, we're going to have our own protest. Well, as these anti-Israel protests at the University of Texas in Austin, when they got out and started chanting and marching, they realized real quick, this doesn't work too well in Texas. As Texas state troopers on horseback put a stop to this nonsense. They had three demonstrators arrested. The university had warned that the Palestine Solidarity Committee, which encouraged students to protest on the campus, that the event was unauthorized and would not be allowed to proceed as planned, according to reports from local KVUE, their television station there. Despite the warning, hundreds of students walked out of the class right around noon yesterday to demonstrate at the school's Gregory Plaza with attempts to occupy the lawn, only to be met by this army of troopers. Amelia Kimball, associate managing editor at the student newspaper, the Daily Texan, said, I don't think students were expecting this kind of a response. I don't think they were either. I don't think they were expecting troopers riding up on horseback. Video from the Daily Texan shows the moment the officers arrived, marching in line and equipped with riot gear as several officers approached on horseback. Kimball said that the protest lasted only minutes, with the crowd ordered to disperse, as she noted physical struggles between police and students. Texas Governor Greg Abbott condemned the demonstration, called for the arrest and expulsion of any student caught in protest. He wrote on X, these protesters belong in jail. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, big period mark. He added, students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university in Texas should be expelled. And I think he'll follow through on that, don't you? The message here, there's a new sheriff in town. If you want to march around condemning the country you live in, shouting death to America, death to Israel, you might want to choose someplace other than the state of Texas. As of last night, police were still pushing and ordering students away from their bikes, from the South Lawn. The remaining crowd of students could be heard shouting, free, free Palestine, as they linked arms and ignored officers' orders. The Palestine Solidarity Committee had put out a call for the emergency action, calling on students to reclaim our space through the protests as a show of solidarity with the college demonstrations in New York and across the country. The group wrote on Instagram, in the footsteps of our comrades at Columbia, Rutgers, New Brunswick, Yale, and countless others across the station, we will be establishing the Popular University for Gaza and demanding our administration divest from death. Well, they didn't demand anything. The U2 administration, however, told the group that the campus will not be occupied by protesters. Simply put, the University of Texas at Austin will not allow this campus to be taken and protesters to derail our mission in ways that groups affiliated with your national organization have accomplished elsewhere, officials wrote in a statement to the group. The college warned, any attempt to do so will subject your organization and its attending members to discipline, including suspension under the institutional rules. They need to throw the group off the campus. They need to suspend their charter or whatever you call it and show them the door at the University of Texas. Now, late last night, initially, there were three people arrested. Late last night, the university confirmed that over 10 had been arrested as they were still dispersing some of the small groups around campus. One of the protesters arrested was identified as an organizer of the event who was taken to Travis County Jail. The swift police action in Texas, again, comes as similar protests at other universities around the country have been tolerated. I think Texas sent a strong message here, and I hope other states will do likewise. Governor Abbott slammed the New York demonstrations on Monday for sowing the seeds of similar protests that have popped up across the nation's colleges. He wrote, "Ivy League universities are showing that their time has passed." State Representative Gina Hinosha, who is a Democrat from Austin, slammed the arrest at UT Austin as unnecessary, saying, "Unless there was an actual threat of violence, this is out of hand," she wrote on X in response to the police action. No, you can't. It doesn't matter if there wasn't violence or not. You can't close down a university. You can't occupy public space like this. I don't know that there was initially any violence at Columbia University, but there were so many of them, it literally closed the class. How fair is that to the rest of the students who won't know part of this? These students need to be suspended, and if they're in here from other countries, send them back home and forbid them from coming back. It's just that simple. 864-477-5639 is the Furman Ford text line. Should we be tolerating this? Should universities be tolerating this? And again, particularly if they're foreign students, if they're here attending schools at our invitation, don't you think they should be sent home and not allowed to come back? Furman Ford text line, 864-477-5639. Speaking of the Furman Ford text line, Tony writes, "So more money to Ukraine, but again, none to its own American citizens. None of these politicians care about Americans." Albert writes, "Who really cares if the congressional baseball game takes place?" You know, Albert, I'm not sure anyone does. This is in reference to a story in yesterday's episode of Just the Truth. If you missed it, go back and listen to episode 132, where we talked about this climate group is set to protest and try to close down the congressional baseball game coming up soon. Jeff writes on the Furman Ford text line, "These people that believe the world is burning, they'll find out when they're in hell, they'll find out what burning really is." It's going to be pretty hot down there, Jeff, that's for sure. Mike P. writes, "Joey, the climate change clowns should look at the temperature increase and radiation from all the solar panels installed everywhere. If they actually tested these independent testers, they would see an increase in hazards, pollutants, and heat in the manufacturing of these wonder panels." Jordan writes, "Anti-Semitism is running rampant everywhere, it seems. Here recently, I've been asked to please not wear my yarmulke at work anymore, not because it offends any of my coworkers or superiors. They're worried it would cause an issue with the less educated clients." I get that, Jordan, and I'm sorry that you're put in that situation. Susan writes, "Biden, who is signing the TikTok ban, will continue campaigning for president on it. What a flaming hypocrite." Faye writes on the Furman Ford text line, "Joey, how shameful to see college students acting against Israel. Our education system and parents have failed. These students are brazen, but at the same time, many have covered their faces." 864-477-5639, your comments are welcome. Joel writes our text of encouragement today saying, "Nothing in life is to be feared. It is only to be understood. Now is the time to understand more so that we may fear less." God bless. Thank you, Joel. 864-477-JOEY is the Furman Ford text line. Your comments are always welcome. An Oklahoma man is facing up to 12 years in prison for having ammunition in his carry-on bag at a Turks and Caicos airport, according to a GoFundMe page for his family. Here's the story. Ryan and Valerie Watson, the parents of two young children, were flying home from their island vacation where they'd been celebrating a friend's 40th birthday. This was on April the 12th when they were arrested at the airport. A description on the family's GoFundMe page states, "They had their lives turned upside down when they tried to return home as local airport security found four rounds of ammunition unknowingly left in a duffel bag from a deer hunting trip. It was not noticed by TSA when leaving America. Now they're facing a legal system that is unfamiliar, daunting, and expensive that operates differently than the American justice system." I'm not sure that our American justice system is any better, but sorry for what this family's going through. The U.S. Embassy in the Bahamas evidently issued a travel alert in September of last year telling Americans not to bring ammunition to the islands. The alert states TCI authorities strictly enforce all firearms-related laws. The penalty for traveling to TCI with a firearm, ammunition, or other weapon is a minimum custodial sentence of 12 years. The embassy further stated that Americans should carefully check their luggage for stray ammunition or forgotten weapons before departing for TCI. But the Watsons insist that they made a terrible mistake. Valerie Watson was released from jail in the Turks and Caicos on Tuesday. Her husband remains in custody with no current timetable for any possibility of bail or a trial date. Now, we also learned that the Royal Turks and Caicos Islands Police Force yesterday confirmed that Ryan Watson's arrest, saying that the 40-year-old Oklahoma resident appeared in a magistrate's court yesterday when he was charged with one count of ammunition possession. He was granted a $15,000 bail under the condition that he does not travel outside of the islands without the court's permission. He surrendered his passport, and he has to report to the Grace Bay Police Station on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and he resides at a specific address under their watch. Ryan is due back in court for a sufficiency hearing on June the 7th, according to the officials. The Watson's family's GoFundMe page says the couple faces mounting legal fees, living expenses, and the overwhelming stress of their situation. The page reads, "The emotional financial toll is immense, and they are at risk of losing everything." This is horrible. Please, if you're traveling in the Caribbean, check your luggage. Make sure you don't. And this was, according to the story, just three rounds of ammo, I guess, that had been left in his duffel bag from a hunting trip that he'd been on previously. Are manufacturing jobs about to be unionized in South Carolina? After a landmark union vote last Friday in Tennessee, the United Auto Workers Union says that they have their sights on two South Carolina auto plants. I have that story for you up next. Portions of today's show made possible by Discounted Appliance Warehouse. Whether you're replacing a broken appliance or maybe you're just upgrading to enhance the look and feel of your home, when you're ready, you sure don't want to wait weeks or even months to start using them. Let me tell you about my friends at Discounted Appliance Warehouse. There's never been any shipping or supply issues. They have over 1,500 appliances in stock. Quite often, you can buy it today and use it today. As you walk through their 11,000 square foot warehouse, just slam full of appliances. And with their expert installation, their award-winning service department, and their extended warranties, Discounted Appliance Warehouse, they have you covered well after the sale. That's because you're more than just a credit card swipe to Jeff and Johnny and Kyle and the whole team at Discounted Appliance Warehouse. They really do treat you like family, and I can attest to that firsthand. They've been taking care of me for years, and they'll take care of you as well. Discounted Appliance Warehouse, they're proud to offer Speed Queen, the only washer and dryers with manufacturer's warranties that cover parts and labor for up to 7 years. Let me ask you to be sure the next time you need to buy an appliance to check out Discounted Appliance Warehouse in Pickens. Find them online as well at dawpickens.com, dawpickens.com. Workers at a Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, overwhelmingly voted to join the United Auto Workers on Friday. And some are wondering if a similar union vote may happen in South Carolina sooner than later. The Friday election was the UAW's third attempt to unionize the Chattanooga plant. The union's victory, 73% voted in favor, was largely caused by the momentum gain from leading a landmark union strike in Detroit last year, according to Scott Baer, a Clemson University economics professor. He said the UAW actually made its first real gains in almost 20 years. I think before that, there was no reason why auto workers in Tennessee or other locations in the South would want to unionize just because they haven't seen any gains. Now the country may be at a tipping point, Baer said. The UAW's victory in Chattanooga is seen as a watershed moment for unions in the South, particularly. The Chattanooga plant is the only foreign auto plant in the region to join the UAW, according to the Washington Post. The organization could now try to unionize workers in other southern states, including South Carolina. Kirk Randazzo, a University of South Carolina political science professor, said this could potentially be coming to South Carolina. A Mercedes-Benz factory near Tuscaloosa, Alabama, will be holding a union election next month in May. South Carolina has 75,000 or more auto industry workers. Several large manufacturing plants, including Mercedes-Benz, Volvo in Charleston, BMW in Spartanburg, and Scout Motors plant under construction in Blythewood, South Carolina, that's set to begin production at the end of 2026. The BMW plant builds globally sold X model sport utility vehicles, and the Charleston Volvo plant builds the S60 sedan and the EX90 SUV, according to the company's websites. The Scout Motors plant will be producing all electric trucks and SUVs and could bring over 4,000 jobs to the state, according to the Richland County Economic Development Office. The UAW recently launched a $41 million campaign to encourage auto workers, particularly in the South, to unionize, according to the Washington Post. As part of that campaign, the UAW plans to target the BMW and Volvo plants in South Carolina. This, according to an article in the Post and Courier. Now, think about that for a moment, and especially if you're one of the workers at BMW or one of these other auto industry manufacturers. I've never cared for a union, and unions do not have a very good history in the South, as you probably know. But if a union can afford to spend $41 million campaigning to encourage workers to unionize, where does that $41 million come from? How much dues do hardworking people have to pay to allow unions to spend $41 million on a campaign to encourage other workers in other states to unionize? Randazzo said the campaign likely prompted a group of Republican Southern governors, including South Carolina's Governor Henry McMaster, to release a joint statement last week denouncing the union's efforts. The statement claimed that UAW's campaign is driven by misinformation and scare tactics and warned that unions would be detrimental to Southern economies. And I would have to agree with that. Again, I don't think there's a place for unionization in our modern days. Yes, they had their time way back when. If you think I'm wrong, send me a quick note on the Furman Ford text line, 864-477-5639. I'd especially love to hear from you if you work at BMW or if you work at one of these plants that potentially could be affected. If you have a chance to vote, would you vote to unionize? The UAW, of course, is backed by President Biden. He's never seen a union he doesn't like. If the union became firmly rooted in the typically Republican-dominated South, politicians would probably be concerned about losing some political strength, according to Professor Randazzo from University of South Carolina. Governor McMaster, of course, has been outspoken about unions in the past. In this year's State of the State address, he said he would fight unionization all the way to the gates of hell. South Carolina already has the lowest rate of union members in the country at 2.3%, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. So could the UAW make gains in such an anti-union state? Is it possible? Bayer says that he thinks unionization would be considered at South Carolina plants, but the UAW doesn't have the same momentum in South Carolina as it does in other places, he said. The state asked a BMW Spartanburg plant how the company's employees might react to an attempt to unionize. It replied with a statement sent via email. BMW manufacturer believes the UAW's record shows that the union has nothing of value to offer BMW workers or the company's Spartanburg plant, according to the company. Even with resistance from South Carolina companies, workers are more interested in unionization than they were before, Randazzo said. He said 6 months ago, South Carolina workers would have overwhelmingly voted against the union, but the UAW's recent wins could prompt workers to hold an election. He said the UAW's pitch goes beyond increasing salaries to improving benefits, providing better working conditions, and giving workers a voice. That appeals to workers, he said. Again, I'd love to hear from you if you work at BMW. I talk to people a lot who work at BMW, and they're very happy. They believe that BMW has given them an opportunity that they may not have had in this area years ago. The joint statement from the Southern governors says unionization in the South would put jobs in jeopardy and halt growth in the region's auto manufacturing sector. You got to think, why have some of these auto manufacturers been coming to the state to begin with? Why is South Carolina so attractive to BMW, to Mercedes, to Volvo, to Scout? Although with the benefits package we gave to Scout, we literally gave away the farm to them. Bayer said the claim isn't entirely founded. He said, I actually don't think in the long run there will be jobs at stake. The employment structure may change or shift a little bit, but I don't think there'll be a job loss. Bayer said there could be short-term effects of unionization, like falling stock prices for unionized plants, but the long-term effects would be more significant. Companies could see slower long-term growth, and other businesses could be hesitant to set up shop in South Carolina, and the South in particular. And that's true. Again, why are they coming to the South to begin with? Why are they coming to South Carolina? Because it's a business-friendly state. On the other hand, unionization at South Carolina auto plants could give workers a unified voice to negotiate with management, he says. That would make it easier to address problems that hinder productivity, he said. For a UAW election to be held at a South Carolina auto plant, the union would first need to provide evidence of support from at least 30% of plant employees, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Again, let me ask you, if you work at BMW, if you know someone who does work at BMW, I would love to hear your take on this. If UAW comes in the next few weeks or months and they ask you about voting to unionize, are you going to be in favor of that? 864-477-5639, 864-477-JOEY is the Furman Ford text line. That's it for today's edition of Just the Truth. Hey, appreciate you joining me in the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Studio. To lose weight for the last time, visit myphdweightloss.com. Join my mailing list. Just go to joeyhudson.com. Click on the Connect with Joey button so that you can receive our emails with the most up-to-date news. Find me on YouTube. Just search for Joey Hudson, and on other social media platforms as well. Facebook, Instagram. Love to hear from you. Love to connect. Your emails are always welcome. Joey at joeyhudson.com. And also, take a few minutes to share today's episode of Just the Truth with a friend or family member. That's how we grow our community, is with you sharing this with people that you know. And it's real simple. Just click on the share button and send it to a few people on your contact list. Take a minute to do that right now, if you would, so that they can join our community here at Just the Truth. Keep those comments coming via the Furman Ford text line as well, 864-477-JOEY. We're back tomorrow. Hope you'll plan to join us. Until then, remember, God's got this. He's still in control.